Historically, Ethiopia is one of those countries that's quite vulnerable to chronic and cyclical drought conditions. But what we're experiencing today with two failed rainy seasons plus El Nino effects has really devastated lives and livelihoods of people in six of the country's regions. But of course, this is not the Ethiopia of the past. We have today a much more resilient people, but also we have a government that is more in control of the situation and that owns the response to the crisis itself.
Have you had a chance to travel to some of the regions?
I have indeed, in the northern part of the country. And I spent a lot of time talking to the women in the community that we visited. And it was clear from what they were saying that they had received some support from government, but of course they were struggling. Many of the children were having to walk long distances to fetch water, and this was affecting school attendance. But one of the things that I picked up also was the sheer resilience of the people and their determination to survive this situation, but also the solidarity within the community. That community I visited had only one water point, and there was an elderly woman who had been given the task of holding the key to that water point so that the allocation of water, of course the community had to ration water, could be organized. But really when I weighed all of this, it was just like a drop in the ocean, because the crisis is really bigger than any community is able to cope with.
Earlier you spoke about the previous droughts that Ethiopia has gone through. Is there any way to compare what's happening now with that drought 30 years ago?
I would actually say, because the numbers of Ethiopians have increased since then, that it's a much bigger crisis. We're not seeing the famine that was seen then because precisely of what I said earlier, that you have a much stronger governance system and more resilient communities. The government some years ago introduced the Productive Safety Net Program, PSMP, which really addresses the needs of the chronically vulnerable people in some of these climate-challenged regions. And that has helped a great deal, because we could be counting 18 million people if we didn't have that program. Of course, we also see a lot of support from the international community to support Ethiopia's development. This is one of the fastest growing economies in the world, and certainly in Africa, with double digit numbers. And I think people have been a little bit confused by that narrative and wonder why, you know, you have these two situations happening in tandem. But I think one thing to note is that were it not for that good economic performance, the government wouldn't have been able to put forward the $300 million, which is unprecedented, that it has invested in solving this crisis. So these are fundamental shifts in the country that, you know, make the difference between now and the 80s.
Is there anything you think our listeners should know, or any other information you would like to share with us?
Yes, thank you. I think the first thing to know is that we do have an opportunity here to save lives and protect livelihoods, because there was very good early warnings on this crisis. We still have a window of opportunity to make sure that this doesn't get into catastrophe, but that window is very rapidly closing. We don't have any money to procure food after April this year. There is no knowing how people are going to cope, because the resources that are required, which is at the moment $1.4 billion, we only have a fraction of that raised up to date. Why is that important? Because it's largely a food crisis. It takes an average of 3 to 4 months to actually procure and get the food transported into the country. If we're going to meet needs as of May, we should have the money to this month, actually, to start procuring that amount of food that is needed, and we don't. And that's really the note of urgency that comes with this.